Just a quick note before getting started. This story is also available on YouTube and Scribblehub for your convenience. Links are in the description. Mech Warrior, Wild Rose, Battletech Fiction by Lucien Dacier. Chapter 5. In Orbit, New San Andreas 4, The Periphery, Rimward of the Circinus Federation, 10 April 3077.
Blossom, status report?
Status is... hands are full, Marie muttered back. I just got to the cockpit, commencing startup procedure.
She had just managed to slide into the broken Blossom's cockpit and turn on the backup power before the comm line had lit up. After she pulled the hatch shut behind her, it was oppressively dark inside, lit just by the indicator lights. She took out a small utility flashlight she'd brought with her for this purpose, looking around the dim confines of the cockpit. She'd spent every free minute over the last 2 months sitting in here and learning the controls as best she could, but being in the cockpit still put her on edge. She swore she could still smell Jane's odor in the command chair, and she could see finger marks in the joysticks from where she'd been gripping them on her flight off Huntington. But now the Sirocco was approaching New St. Andrews, and she had to swallow that fear. The Hussars would need her to actually get moving soon and show she was worth the effort of keeping around. She set about her preparations. She had already stripped down to her shorts and tank top. She sat on the command chair and strapped the cooling vest on over her torso. Then she turned her attention to what she'd brought with her. A case she had been traveling with for years, carrying it packed in her luggage as she and her mother had hopped from one planet to another. She pressed her thumb to a small print scanner on the case. It hissed and split open, revealing a padded interior that snugly held a shiny metallic helmet. Marie carefully pulled it from the box and held it almost reverently between her hands. It was a neuro helmet, a gift from her father. He'd even had it engraved with a black rose with prominent thorns, the symbol of his mercenary unit. The neuro helmet had the same input-output ports that her training helmet did, but that was where the similarities ended. Whereas the training helmet had been a tremendous bulky affair that weighed on her like a pile of bricks, this thing weighed less than 2 kilos. It was also smaller, not extending over the shoulders like a typical neuro helmet. It looked sleeker, too, still militaristic in design, but with smoother, cleaner lines. She could tell from the Spartan efficiency of the design that it was clan technology, which meant it was more advanced than anything available in the inner sphere. It was also unbelievably rare. The clans didn't part with any of their technology without a fight. Getting a fresh neuro helmet from them would take a combination of skill and luck not often seen. Fortunately for her, her father had had that combination. It had seen him through Tukiid and through years of fighting the clans afterwards. She blushed despite herself, thinking of the enormous effort it must have taken her father to get one of these neuro helmets. He'd set 2 aside for his children, locking them up for safekeeping until they were ready. How many times had she taken this helmet out of its case over the years, just to look at it and think about what it promised? She'd even put it on her head a few times as a kid, dreaming about piloting a mech or flying an aerospace fighter. Now here she was, sitting in a machine that was both of those things. Maybe it wasn't the life she or her father had planned on, but it made her chest tight to be sitting here. Marie took a breath and pulled the helmet on over her head. It fit snugly, but not uncomfortably so. The viewing window was clear and wider than her training helmets had been, giving her a better peripheral vision. There was no sign of the separate internal monitor she was used to, either. She turned her head back and forth, getting a feel for the weight on her head before she unplugged the training helmet, tossed it behind the command chair, plugged the new helmet into the broken Blossom, and keyed in the activation code. She shuddered as the neuro helmet booted up, ice running down her spine as it imprinted on her alpha brainwaves. It suddenly felt tight on her skull, like her brain was being squished inside of her. Her head swam with a sudden wave of dizziness. She resisted the urge to pull the helmet off, and instead started making adjustments, fiddling with the knobs on the back and tweaking the input-output feeds. Slowly, the pressure on her head faded and it stopped feeling like she was swimming in static. She blinked several times, trying to clear her vision. A new neuro helmet always had a learning curve for her.
She knew it was safer to keep the old one, but sitting in the Blossom, about to take it out as an actual pilot for the first time, she couldn't resist the chance to finally put her father's gift to use. All around her, the Blossom woke up as the reactor finished warming up and came fully online. The control board came to life, bathing her in middling amber light from the indicators. A sub-display winked to life with the wireframe of the aerospace fighter, still a mix of green and yellow with the patchwork repairs. She immediately noticed the difference in the neurohelmet. First, she could turn her head, letting her see the Blossom's whole cockpit. The main view screen in front of her was only part of the story. To her left, right, and overhead were more display screens showing the view outside, mimicking an old-world fighter cockpit canopy. It was certainly clearer than the tiny view through her old neurohelmet's internal screen had been. As though summoned by that thought, the familiar compressed view appeared at the lower edge of her sight, superimposed over the cockpit controls, giving her a strange double vision effect. Her eyes widened as she realized the neurohelmet was projecting the compressed view directly under her retinas. "Okay, old girl," she whispered to the mech, patting the control console. "I stood up for you, so work with me, all right?" She went through the usual pre-launch checklist for an aerospace fighter, and double-checked the board. She hadn't been able to actually fly the Blossom since landing on the Sirocco, but she'd at least had time to familiarize herself with the controls and reconfigure them for a left-handed pilot. She'd also found the eject, a pair of pull cords at the base of the seat. She hoped she wouldn't need those. At least the fuel gauge showed she still had 3/4 of a tank left. She finished her preparations by finding an oxygen hose that had been tucked under the seat and connecting it to a socket on the front of the helmet. Some mechs provided breathing hoses as a backup if the cockpit seals failed in a hostile environment, but most mech warriors didn't bother with them. Aerospace fighter pilots, on the other hand, almost always had a high-purity oxygen feed to help them power through high-G maneuvers. She appreciated that the Blossom included those hoses, and that she'd been able to find them while she'd been combing over the cockpit. "This is the Broken Blossom," she said into her helmet's mic. "Reactor is up, all systems are green."
"Copy that, Blossom. Launch bay opening in 15.
She did another full systems check, going through diagnostics of the Blossom's computer systems and double-checking weapons and fuel. Before she knew it, alarm klaxons were blaring outside, and the aerospace fighter bay depressurized. The huge bay door opened up ahead of her, and blast shields lifted into place behind her. "This is Blossom, confirming launch door is clear. Looks a lot cleaner than the last dropship we got kicked out of."
The operator on the other end did not laugh at her joke, but she told herself it at least got a smile.
"Roger, Blossom. Clear for launch in 50 seconds.
The dropship was getting set up for its atmospheric entry, which was a delicate operation at best. It had to rotate to the right orientation to hit the atmosphere, switching from rocketing through vacuum to flying through air. Now on top of that, it had to give a good launch window to the aerospace fighter that the mercenary Lance was insisting on launching. "It was standard procedure," Carradine had told the captain. "Mercenary units had to have a procession," she'd said. "It was part of the formal changing of the guard. It wouldn't do for their newest recruit to sit quietly in a hangar bay." Marie was sure the captain hadn't liked the extra maneuver, even more so for a pilot who had caused him so much trouble at the beginning of the trip. "On the other hand," she thought, "maybe he'll be happy to spit me out of his boat."
2, 1, launch.
The operator's voice said in her ear. Marie nodded in response and pushed the throttle forward. She did not go to maximum thrust, a classic mistake of rookie pilots. They were still in vacuum, so with no atmospheric friction, going full throttle right out of the bay would send her halfway around the planet before she could course correct. A gentle boost got her clear of the Sirocco, which immediately rotated away, closing the bay door behind her. She flipped her middle finger at the image of the ship in her view. "Good riddance," she muttered. The Blossom's landing gear retracted into the fuselage, jury-rigged front struts and all. With that secured, Marie set about making her own entry to New St. Andrews' atmosphere. This had been the second hardest part of aerospace fighter training, right after landing. She had done plenty of simulated entries, but only done the real thing a handful of times. She mentally crossed her fingers and tightened her grip on the controls.
Much like when she'd been walking over land, the Blossom's computers were handling the complicated details. All Marie had to do was keep the craft on an entry vector displayed on the main screen, and not think about how deviating off that path meant she would either burn up in the atmosphere or plow into the planet like a meteor.
She flew towards the planet, her eyes sweeping periodically over the board to make sure no alerts had come up. She also kept an eye on the Sirocco as it prepared for its own entry. It had switched from its belly thrusters over to its main rear engines, flying like a conventional aircraft on its stubby wings as it approached the planet's atmosphere. As Marie watched, the Sirocco's lower armor began to glow red with the heat of atmospheric entry. She followed alongside it, keeping the Blossom level as fire streaked past the cockpit. She did her best to stay calm, reminding herself that the armor on the craft had been built to withstand heavy laser fire, and its fusion engine was more than strong enough to control her flight in spite of things like wind resistance or gravity. After several tense minutes, the flame streaking past her faded and the screens cleared up, presenting her with a clear view of New St. Andrews. It was refreshing to see so much land below her. Huntington had been mostly water, with the planet's population squeezed into collections of archipelagos that were jokingly called continents. In stark contrast, New St. Andrews had broad green landmasses stretching out in all directions. From this altitude, Marie could see how the planet had been only partially colonized. The land was covered in dark green forests, broken up with swaths of large farmland standing out as a brighter green, dotted with towers that amplified the weak sunlight falling on the native crops that were thriving under modern farming technology. She noticed the aerospace fighter was handling more sluggishly than she remembered. It had been tricky enough to fly back on Huntington, but now it felt like she was fighting the controls to get the fighter aimed in the right direction. "Just adjusting to a new atmosphere," she reasoned. Huntington had had a pretty thin atmosphere, something that had taken her lungs some time to adjust to. New St. Andrews had a more normal atmospheric pressure. At least she wouldn't spend the first few days being constantly winded. Once she'd steadied her flight, she hit the comm line. "This is Blossom, I've entered atmosphere," she announced.
"Roger that, Blossom, you are clear for approach,"
Carradine's voice responded.
"Give them a show for us."
"Roger that." She angled the Blossom towards the spaceport and pushed the throttle up. The Sirocco was quickly left behind as she shot down. The coordinates in her computer were for the spaceport, but it was impossible to miss the city of Killarymont, just a few kilometers away from it. It was a modest settlement compared to what she'd seen on Huntington. New St. Andrews had a total worldwide population of just over 5 million, and only about a tenth of that was in Killarymont. Most of the population apparently preferred to be out in the wilderness, living off the land. "Give them a show, huh?" Marie asked herself. She turned the Blossom, arcing her flight path over the city and lazily corkscrewing through a clumsy barrel roll. She shot past the city, close enough that windows must have been shaking with the thunder from her engines, then banked the Blossom into a sharp turn. She grit her teeth against the G-forces, easing up after a moment as she became distinctly aware of just how much mass was leaning into the turn, and she realized she wasn't sure what the Blossom's structural tolerance was. She awkwardly leveled off and decided the clumsy flyby was the best she'd be able to manage right now. She pointed the nose back towards the spaceport. Landing was a relatively simple affair. The control tower on the spaceport had been trying to get in touch with her since she'd started coming down from orbit. By the time she came in for a landing, the controller was sounding especially annoyed. The man still directed her to the spaceport's main landing strip, with a warning that she would have to clear the runway shortly for the incoming dropship. The landing gear thankfully extended without jamming, and she swooped into a rough but successful landing. She let out a breath she'd been holding and started taxiing off the runway as a flag operator signaled her off to the side. The Broken Blossom had barely cleared the runway when a pair of black cars were rolling towards her. Detecting her attention, her neurohelmet magnified the view of them without being asked. She could tell they weren't spaceport personnel. No engineer would drive cars that fancy. The door of the lead car opened up as soon as it had pulled to a stop in front of her. A small man with greasy hair climbed out and stomped towards her, angrily adjusting the glasses that were hanging off of his nose.
"What is this supposed to be?"
the man shouted at her. The external speakers picked up his voice easily enough, and the magnified display gave her a good view of the vein popping out on his forehead. Marie sighed and blinked hard. She already had a behind-the-eyeballs headache that was threatening to become much more intense. Her body still wasn't used to the Blossom, and now she'd given herself a new neurohelmet to adjust to as well. She had very little patience for stodgy officials at the moment. She thumbed the button for the external speakers. "It's an aerospace fighter," she said to him. "Do you need thicker lenses or something?" The man's face somehow grew a few shades redder than it already was.
"Did you not read the terms of the contract?"
he shouted up at her. He slapped his hand on a pack of papers he'd been carrying.
"We were expecting 4 battle mechs today. We did not contract to supply or house a jet."
"Aerospace fighter," she corrected. Her eyes fell on the lever on the side of the control board. "What the hell? But fine, you want a battle mech? No problem." She grabbed the lever and put her weight behind it, pushing it all the way to the top of its track. She shivered, her sense of balance swimming as the neurohum struggled to adjust to a mech function it clearly had not been designed for. She kept her eyes on the display all the same, watching as the broken blossoms split open along seams, the arms and legs dropping down to the ground, then the landing gear and wings lifting up and folding away behind the mech. The nose cone swung down over the mech's chest, leaving the disembodied cockpit to become the head. As the panels of the mech closed back up to form a solid armored carapace, she noticed, with some embarrassment, that the transformation did not leave her standing on her feet, but rather down on all fours. Biting her lip in consternation, she pulled back on the controls and the blossom sat up, now resting on its knees. Her embarrassment was quickly tempered as she saw the shocked look on the official's face. He'd even dropped the packet of papers he'd been clutching so firmly a moment ago. "The other guys are coming in now, in case you didn't notice," she announced to the man, and jerked the blossom's arm up to point a thumb back at the descending dropship. Behind her, the Sirocco was making its final approach. The man just stood there speechless. Calling that a success, she set about getting the blossom's legs under her. 1 foot came up and touched down, but as she tried to stand, a profound sense of vertigo hit her. The new neural helmet, and new pilot, still trying to adjust to the unfamiliar mech they were connected to. The mech's gyro screamed and the blossom staggered, losing her balance. She came down hard on one arm, the hand hitting the ground splayed out, a scant few meters from the shocked official. Marie winced. "Let's just say I meant to do that," she whispered to herself. She tried again, moving more deliberately this time. Keeping the one arm braced on the ground for balance, she managed to get 1 foot on the ground, then the other. She carefully extended the mech's legs, standing up shakily. Her head cleared as the blossom stood, happening so abruptly that Marie's breath caught. Suddenly, the ground felt steady under her. On top of that, she became distinctly aware of the bulk of the broken blossom around her. It almost felt like a heavy suit hanging off her body, letting her know it was there. She squared her shoulders and tried to adjust to the new sensations, and the mech swayed in place, following her movements. Marie's eyes widened at that. Her training neurohelmet had let the mech share her balance, but this was a whole new level of connection to a machine. "Just needed some time to get used to me, huh?" she asked the mech. By the time the blossom had caught her balance, the Sirocco had landed. Marie carefully moved the mech to step towards the ship and stand at attention outside the massive bay doors. She listened to the comm chatter over the radio for a few minutes as the crew on board did their final checks. Before long, the bay doors started opening. First out was Carradine's Fleetfoot, the Raptor. The small, bird-like mech stepped out furtively, followed closely by Wolfgang's commando. According to Carradine, Wolfgang refused to come up with a name for his mech, so she'd given him the unimaginative callsign, Wolf. Lumbering out the other side of the Sirocco came Hoshino's Charger, taller and broader than either of the other two mechs. Hoshino's rod definitely earned its name as the hunk of junk. It looked like a patchwork mess of repairs that spoke of years of service. As for Thomas, the dispossessed man was waiting inside the dropship, watching. Marie imagined he was burning with frustration at not being able to join in the procession. Marie took a moment to take in the sight of the battle mechs. She had had time to become familiar with the Hussar's rides, with each pilot having plenty to say about his or her machine, but this was the first time seeing them up and moving. Before, they had just been metal blocks. Now they were alive, titans walking around with the humans below standing well away. She could see the Hussars were still sporting the damage from Huntington. All 3 mechs had scars in their armor. Still,
Carradine had them line up outside the dropship like soldiers standing for review. Taking that as a cue, Marie maneuvered the Blossom up to the group, trying to fall in line with the Lance.
The mech moved ponderously, Marie becoming uncomfortably aware of how she was sitting on top of 50 tons of moving parts balanced on a pair of legs. The gyro spun furiously under her as she moved, keeping her upright. She could feel the attention of the hussars on her, watching her try to walk.
The display garnered some attention, at least. Marie noticed a lot of gawkers were staring at her and the other hussars' mechs from the ground. She looked down at the displays, reddening a little as she noticed the Blossom still had her old Hudson's Hammers paint job, dotted with obvious armor patches and sporting different colors than the rest of the Lance. Even though the hussars' mechs were obviously damaged, next to them the Blossom looked second-hand.
All these hussars reporting for duty, Carradine announced from the Raptor.
The suited official managed to recover himself and make his way over to the assembled battle mechs. After flipping through his papers, he directed them to a mech bay on one edge of the spaceport. The mech bay was surprisingly large. Marie counted enough hangars for a full company of battle mechs. At the moment, the hussars were the only mechs there. As Marie parked the Blossom, she wondered just what this job was going to entail.
Chapter 6. Kilarimont. New St. Andrews 4, The Periphery. Rimward of the Circinus Federation. 11 April 3077. The morning after landing, Marie was in the mech bay, sitting at the Blossom's feet with her new Neuro helmet on a work table. Next to her was a set of tools, a cooling cup of coffee, and a bottle of painkillers. The behind-the-eyeballs headache from yesterday had matured into a full-splitting migraine by the evening, leaving her dizzy and sick to her stomach. She'd gotten the relief of a few hours of fitful sleep before waking up with her head still throbbing. The sun had not been up yet, but she'd known it was pointless to lie in bed any longer. So she'd gotten dressed and headed out to see the Blossom. To see my mech, she'd thought to herself, liking the sound of it. The Blossom's true nature looked so obvious to her now. In the mech bay on Huntington, she'd thought it was just a funny-looking phoenix hawk. She'd mistaken the folded-up wings as extra armor plates protecting the back thrusters. Now she couldn't see how anyone could miss what they were. The extra joints were right there, after all. She shook her head at it. Just a design no one expects anymore, she thought. She'd connected a diagnostic computer to her neurohelmet and was making adjustments when she heard footsteps approaching. She looked up to see Hoshino walking towards her, a cup of coffee in each hand. She spared him a wave and a half-hearted good morning.
Ohayo, he replied cheerfully, and set one of the coffees down by her. What brings you out of bed so early, young one? Are you adjusting to the planet's cycle?
Marie winced at his volume. It was too early for anyone to be that energetic. I don't sleep so well on a good day. Also, my machine hates me, she answered sullenly. I'm trying to convince her to go easier on me.
Ah, I know of temperamental machines. My catamaran needs constant recalibration to walk straight, he said with a chuckle, pointing over at the beefy charger parked next to the Blossom. Does the rose mean something? He asked more quietly, eyeing the symbol on her helmet.
Marie shrugged. It was a gift, that's all I know, she answered, hoping she sounded convincing. And every neural helmet I've ever used has needed some tweaking. My brain's a little busted, she said with a tap on her skull.
Oh?
Hoshino asked, pulling up a seat next to her. I took a bad concussion when I was 12, she answered. She gave him a bitter grin. For a while, they said I wouldn't be able to pilot a mech or an aerofighter. Turns out I just needed a little more work to get my brain in sync with it all.
Hmm,
Hoshino rumbled. His expression turned more somber.
12 years old, he asked.
She felt less than saw him glance down at her legs.
Yeah, they're related, she admitted. Lucky for me, it takes more than a building falling on me to keep me down. That much I have figured out for myself, Hoshino said.
He turned his attention to the Blossom, looking the mech over.
I do not know what I would do if I were thrown out of a dropship in a mech that decided to stop being a mech halfway down.
You would have been able to find the eject, Marie said. Me, I didn't know what was what. All I could remember was the first rule of aerospace piloting. If it's not flying, you need more thrust. Hoshino laughed at that.
Wise words, to be sure. You will have much to teach us about flying machines.
He took a drink from his coffee and went quiet for a few seconds.
How is mercenary life working for you and your mother so far?
Marie shrugged. I only just landed. Give me a few days before I really screw something up. Hoshino laughed at that. It was an honest laugh, not polite or forced. It was enough to lower Marie's guard a little bit. The trip to the planet had taken 2 months, but in between learning the Blossom's controls, triple-checking the repairs, reading employment forms, and keeping her mother company, she hadn't had much time to talk with her new teammates. She appreciated that Hoshino was making an effort, so she decided to say a little more.
Honestly, Mom and me have been hopping around on dropships for almost a decade, and I've been riding around with mercenaries since before then. This, she said, gesturing around at the mech bay, was my playpen as a kid. The only difference is this time I've got a ride of my own. Actually, my aunt drove a Phoenix Hawk for the longest time. Maybe she's watching out for me.
Hoshino nodded sagely.
I believe my ancestors watch over me as well. Did your parents plan for you to be a mech warrior?
Marie's mouth went tight, and she shrugged. Let's just say plans changed a few times, she answered. How about you? Grand family plans riding on your shoulders? Now it was Hoshino's turn to shrug.
I am from a proud family of samurai, and as you say, plans changed as well. Fortunately, my parents had the foresight to give me a fortuitous name.
He tilted his head up, a twinkle of pride in his eye.
Heihachi is the name of one of their favorite characters in an old world film. He was a noble samurai, a ronin like myself, cursed to ride the whims of an uncaring universe with no master or home. Yet he still fought on the side of the weak and the defenseless. He always knew how to smile, lift the spirits of those around him with a kind word or a funny joke. He was a light in dark times for all his allies.
Sounds encouraging, Marie said. She made a final adjustment on the neurohelmet and unplugged it from the tester. I'm sure Carradine finds a use for you. Hoshino was silent for a moment, taking a sip from his coffee and thinking.
Carradine is a unique leader, he finally answered. She uses strategies many would find unconventional, but she gave this old Ronin a home.
He chuckled.
I think all the Hussars have a similar story. Each of us is looking for somewhere to belong.
Marie turned her head to look at him and offered a thin-lipped smile. Sounds like the story of my life, she said. You guys are just the latest people to try and make me fit in somewhere.
Spoken like someone who's used to being told she doesn't fit.
Marie and Hoshino both looked up at the new voice to see Carradine walking towards them.
Nice gear there, McLeod, Carradine commented, giving the clan neurohelmet an appraising look.
Yeah, something I was saving in case I ever steal a battle mech that flies, Marie responded with a smirk. Carradine gave her a polite smile.
Seems to me you need something to go along with that, she said.
Producing a tightly wrapped bundle from under one arm, she tossed it to Marie. Marie caught it, recognizing the dark blue and orange piping of a hussar's uniform, matching the color scheme on their mechs. The name, McLeod, was prominently emblazoned on the breast, right under the title, Pilot. I called up a shop on our way in from the jump point and had them do a rough job on that. Had to take a few guesses at your measurements, Carradine explained with a shrug.
Sorry, the only time to make one, so take care of that. You were turning heads yesterday. Best if people know who you are. Now get changed. Mission briefing's happening in the conference room in 10. Client's gonna be there, so let's all look our best, she added, winking at Marie.
Marie looked down at her own rumpled, casual clothes before hastily gathering up her things and heading off to the locker room near the entrance of the mech bay. Inside, she found a locker bearing her name scribbled out on a piece of tape. She changed quickly, taking a minute to get used to the feel of the fresh uniform, before stowing her clothes and neurohelmet in her locker. She noticed that her uniform was a simpler cut than the other hussars, and reasoned it was the best the local shop had been able to do. Hoshino was waiting outside of the locker room for her. He made small talk as he led her out of the mech bay and to the conference room in the spaceport administration building. Wolfgang was already there, standing with his shirt half unbuttoned. In contrast to him, Carradine looked completely put together, not a hair out of place. She glanced briefly up from her datapad as Hoshino and Marie walked into the meeting room. "All right, hussars, fall in," she said to them. "Wolf, straighten that up." Wolfgang shrugged and grudgingly started buttoning up his shirt. Marie fell into line alongside Wolfgang and Hoshino, standing up straight and squaring her shoulders just like she had seen countless other mech warriors do when being addressed by their commander. Carradine gave Marie a brief nod in appreciation of her formality. They stood at attention in silence for a few minutes before the door opened. Thomas walked in, stiffly turning to hold the door for the two men that followed him. One was tall and muscular, the other was small with dark, greasy hair. Marie felt a pit in her stomach as she recognized the latter as the man from the tarmac yesterday. "Good morning," Carradine said to the room. "Hussas, the sergeant and I have just spent the last hour going over the latest intel with our employer liaison. They've asked to meet the unit, to make sure we're all straight on the mission orders." She gestured to the two men who had followed Thomas in. "These are the representatives from Meridian Manufacturing, Mr. Angus Bauer and Mr. Donald Coghill."
"Coghill,"
the shorter man sharply corrected on her pronunciation. His annoyed expression did not change as he swept his eyes over them.
"Are there any more of you, or is this it?"
Carradine's face twitched before she put on a polite smile. "Ollie's Hussars is a one-lance unit, Mr. Coghill. This is everyone." Marie tensed, the pit in her stomach deepening as Coghill looked them over. He had the look of someone who was never happy with what he saw. He glared at the assembled hussars and adjusted his glasses.
"I'll tell you what I just finished telling your sergeant," he said. "I didn't want an off-world unit on this planet. Meridian has its own defense force in place, and it's been keeping the peace on this planet for years without a problem. I thought the decision had already been made not to hire mercenaries, but here you are."
"Lucky us," Marie thought, only just barely keeping herself from muttering that under her breath. Coghill gave her an annoyed look, as though able to read her thoughts.
"You know what I hear every time I check the news?" Coghill said. "Another group of mercenaries who've broken contract. And more who took a job under false pretenses, while they were really working for the word of Blake," he said, the vitriol clear in his voice. "Bringing mercenaries onto New St. Andrews means the board of directors is rolling the dice. They have put me in charge of making sure you are as trustworthy as you say."
"Hey, we got a solid C+ rating," Wolfgang commented.
Despite herself, Marie snorted a barely repressed laugh. Thomas loudly cleared his throat and gave them both a sharp glare.
"And so far, I'm not liking what I'm seeing," Coghill went on.
His eyes snapped to Marie.
"You've barely been on planet for 24 hours and you've already flown in a fighter jet without clearance and put me in danger with it. Is this the kind of people we've hired?"
"I thought best you get a real taste of our capabilities," Carradine answered before Marie could say anything. "I apologize, there may have been a few bumps yesterday. Pilot McLeod is our newest hire." The larger man, Bauer, suddenly piped up.
"What are you doing in that jet mech yesterday?"
he asked.
"That was a bonny show you gave us. When are you flying it again?"
Marie drew back at the man's boisterousness, while Coghill scowled at him. Carradine smiled and met his attention. "Pilot McLeod will be getting acclimated to the planetary environment, just like the rest of us," Carradine answered. "You've seen what the lamb can do if need be, but for the moment it will be grounded, at least until I get a better feel for what we're up against." Marie's brow furrowed. She hadn't heard anything about being grounded. After flying in yesterday, she'd been assuming Carradine wanted her in the air. She tentatively raised her hand for attention, but Carradine did not see it, instead keeping her attention on Bauer and Coghill. "Now that we're all here, I was about to start the mission briefing," Carradine said. Coghill nodded and gestured for her to go on. "So our client is Meridian Manufacturing, the biggest business here on New St. Andrews," Carradine began. "They took over the production lines for Scorpion Vedette tanks a decade ago, and have been doing good business arming this planet and its neighbors against raiders and pirates. More recently, they've been getting into battle mech production. They've just about got the kinks worked out on their flagship model, a light mech they've named the Arbiter. Meridian is billing it as a pirate buster, and lately they've gotten the chance to test their claim. In the past months, there's been a serious ramp-up in pirate activity in nearby systems.
We were originally hired to reinforce and train the security teams on planet, with an option to ship off to neighboring systems for some pirate hunting. But the situation's changed while we were en route from Huntington. A couple weeks ago, a dropship with no IFF signature entered the New St. Andrews system from a pirate point and landed out in the wilderness. It lifted off about an hour later and burned hard on its way out. By all indications, it was on planet long enough to unload a decent-sized raiding party. Meridian security forces have intercepted a couple of light mechs so far, but by all indications, the raiders have plenty more forces in the woods, and they've already started hitting isolated targets. So we're going to be skipping straight to the pirate hunting part of our contract. Wolfgang grunted.
How bad are we talking?
Answering that question is part of our marching orders, Garrison answered, an unimpressed look on her face. The best we have to work with right now is scattered reports from security forces and long-distance sensor sweeps.
What kind of dropship was it? Murray asked.
That would be the bad news, Garrison answered. According to initial reports, the dropship that came in was an Overlord class. The rest of them tensed, and Marie didn't blame them. An Overlord was a frightening beast, able to hold a full battalion of 36 battle mechs and half a dozen aerospace fighters, along with support staff for both. On top of that, the dropship itself was a mobile fortress, loaded with enough guns to hold off a whole company of battle mechs on its own. Wolfgang let out a low whistle.
That's not a raid, that's a goddamn invasion force.
Carradine held up a hand placatingly. It's safe to assume they didn't deliver a full battalion. By the reports I've gotten from neighboring systems, SOP for this particular band of pirates is to make a quick pass on the planet to drop off a raiding team. Then the dropship leaves for another planet, where it drops off another raiding team. Rinse and repeat a few times, then the dropship circles back to pick all the teams up. The raiding teams are in charge of hitting targets and setting up a dust-off point for when the dropship comes back for them.
The dropship is unseen, except for when it comes and goes, Hoshino commented, nodding. Perhaps these pirates ride aboard a ghost.
Carradine ignored the attempt at a joke. Overlords aren't easy to come by out here in the periphery, so they're getting the money's worth out of this one, and going out of their way to keep it safe from a turn fire. Basic understanding for each raiding team is have an LZ ready for us or get left behind. So expect people who fight like they're cornered, because they basically are. She paused, giving that a minute to sink in. Now, Meridian security teams will be focusing on protecting their manufacturing plants. Our job is to go out into the woods and sweep for whatever that dropship left behind. Marie did her best not to flinch at the order. Go out and look around seemed like a very vague order, especially when there could be as much as 3 companies of battle mechs out there. When do we expect this overlord to be coming back? She asked. He left a couple weeks ago. Factor in jumps to other systems and time for the jump ship to recharge in between, and I'd say we've got 2, maybe 3 months before it jumps back in system. Marie blinked. The pirates leave their teams on planet that long? She asked.
Pirate Buster's not up to doing some real busting, Wolfgang muttered.
Cohill's expression darkened as he glared at the man.
Meridian has an 8-month backlog on new orbiters. Dedicating enough of our machines to fend off these raiders means delaying our shipments even more. The cost to company goodwill alone would be too much to justify.
Remember, people, this is the periphery, Carradine added on, cutting off Cohill from saying more. They don't have house militaries or huge mercenary units to rely on for garrisons. Meridian might have the metal on hand, but they're not a MechWarrior Academy, she said with a nod at Cohill. They don't have the manpower to go scouting through thousands of square kilometers looking for pirates. And the pirates know that. They've landed expecting they've got the upper hand and can do as they please until the dropship's ready to come back for them. That's why we're here. Meridian wants to turn the tables, and they're paying for our experience with these kinds of missions. Cohill drew back a little at the interruption, but then nodded in grudging agreement.
Yes, that's it exactly. Bringing you in means we get to focus on what we do best. But we at Meridian Manufacturing want to make sure you are a good investment. Maybe the great houses can burn their money on some lackadaisical unit that sits around all day, but we at the company want to see results.
He crossed his hands imperiously behind his back.
Our security teams are more than up to protecting our factories. We need someone who will take a proactive stance. and take steps to stop these raiders before they mount an attack on any of our facilities.
Don't worry about that. My people are professionals at this kind of thing, Carradine replied before turning her attention back to Marie and the others. Now whatever's out there is moving quickly. They hit isolated targets, and by the time any defense force can respond, they've already faded back into the woods. Meridian's security team is doing its best playing defense, but as Mr. Cohill says, they want someone more proactive. So it's on us to show them the Hussars are fast enough to intercept these raiders. That goes double for our new blood, she added on as she turned her attention to Marie. Don't expect me to go easy on you, McLeod. You made a hell of an entrance, but I need to know you can keep up with us. Ready for whatever you've got for me, sir, Marie answered. I've seen my fair share of rough days. It'll be nice to be the one handing out the trouble instead of taking it. Carradine gave her an approving look. See, that's the attitude I need to hear from all of you. Wolfgang got an irritated look on his face, but Hoshino shot Marie a smile.
The youngest often try the hardest, he said. I think McLeod's son will be an excellent addition.
Wolfgang grumbled in annoyance.
All right, the kid's excited and all, but what about the Sarge? He gonna be riding around in a jeep while we're tromping through the woods?
Thomas can handle himself, Carradine answered. I will say that salvage rights on this contract are solid. We get to keep a big chunk of anything we bring down. So if we find him a new mech out here, great. Until then, he's gonna be riding shotgun with one of you. Thanks for volunteering your back seat, Wolf. Wolfgang crossed his arms and smirked at Thomas.
You better bring a breather mask along. I like me some good breakfast beans.
Hoshino laughed at that, while Marie rolled her eyes. She sympathized with Thomas. Battlemech cockpits were far from spacious, and they were quickly filled with the smell of body sweat and damp breath, especially with two people squeezed in. She made a mental note to double up on her deodorant routine and find a decent air freshener for her cockpit in case Thomas ever got assigned to her. Carradine looked to Thomas. Sergeant, break down the mission specifics for us. Thomas nodded.
There are multiple high-value targets we can assume the pirates will try to hit. Primary targets include our employer's three manufacturing plants. Apparently, they're all working around the clock to build the Arbiter, which makes them prime targets for any pirates looking for spare mech parts. As for secondary targets, we should watch the mountain ridge going north-south on the main continent for any mining operations.
Pirates want to go home with bags of rocks?
Wolfgang asked skeptically.
New St. Andrews mountain ranges are rich in titanium ore and palladium, Cohill answered, cutting off Thomas's reply. They're both key elements in battlemech production, and we have been protecting them for years.
Also, that Overlord might even have manufacturing facilities on board. If they find any ore out here, they could refine it in flight, Marie interjected. She paused, seeing how they had all turned to look at her with expressions ranging from annoyance to surprise. I saw a dropship with an onboard foundry once. Made the lower decks hot as hell, but they could fabricate battlemech parts right on board. As you can see, my people understand the situation out here, Carradine said to Cohill.
Just like we understand the mountain ranges are big enough that it's impossible to guard the whole area.
If this raiding team brought the right equipment, they could do very well for themselves pulling out bags of rocks to take home.
What are you going to do about it then?
Cohill asked her.
The plan is to do what we do best, Carradine answered confidently. Hussars like to move. We will be patrolling through the likely targets. The raiders are working with limited supplies and no backup, so we can assume they're very skittish about seeing battle mechs on their sensors. We keep moving and make sure we're seen, and the raiders will be off balance. They shouldn't have time to make any serious strikes. If we keep up the pressure, someone's bound to make a mistake. And as soon as they give us an opening, we'll take them down.
Aye, that's what I wanted to hear from you,
Bauer said proudly. He smiled a practiced smile that flashed his blindingly white teeth.
Soon as me mech arrives, I'll be ready to mount up and kick some arse with all of ye.
Carradine returned the smile. I'm sure Meridian Security Forces are lucky to have you, Mr. Bauer.
Mr. Bauer is not on the Meridian Security Team, Cohill said, annoyed. He is one of our test pilots. The company has decided that even if we are hiring mercenaries to deal with these pirates, this still represents an unprecedented opportunity to show the periphery what the Arbiter can do. That is why Mr. Bauer will be accompanying you on your operation.
Marie felt the mood shift in the room. Thomas, standing behind Bauer and Cohill, looked like he'd just been forced to swallow something slimy and still alive. The rest of the hussars managed to keep their composure. Carradine and Wolfgang stayed stone-faced, while Hoshino cracked a forced smile, though Marie could almost hear the man groaning internally. For his part, Bauer looked proud.
"It'll be a damn pleasure to be working with ye," he said. "You'll all be trying to keep up with me once I get out there."
"Mr. Bauer is our most skilled test pilot," Cohill added on. "No one knows our arbiter better." Carradine was visibly clenching her jaw, but managed to smile.
"We'll all be looking forward to seeing what you can do," she said politely. "Sergeant, what's our unit readiness?"
Thomas straightened up as Cohill glanced at him.
"Still doing maintenance checks," he answered.
"We've got some repairs to make before we're back up to 100%, though."
"That's what I thought."
Carradine looked at Cohill and Bauer. "We had a rapid withdrawal from our last deployment, and unfortunately the dropship we took here wasn't equipped to do anything beyond superficial repairs en route. I'm sure you understand. We need some time to get ready before we move out." Surprisingly, Cohill did not look annoyed at this admission. Instead, he merely nodded.
"That is fine," he said. "We are preparing Mr. Bauer's mech for deployment at the moment. We expect it to arrive in another week. In the meantime, I am authorized to let you know Meridian allows you to use the repair facilities here at the spaceport."
Carradine made a noise of acknowledgement. "Sounds like more than enough to get our machines in order. Pass my thanks along to your superiors." "A week, sir?" Marie asked skeptically. From what she'd seen of the Hussars' mechs so far, a week would be barely enough time to get them back in fighting shape. Carradine glanced back at her.
"Less time than that, pilot. You better get ready quick. We've got some new equipment to break in and make sure it can keep up."
Marie raised her eyebrows at being called equipment, but held her tongue. Out the corner of her eye, Marie could see Hoshino and Wolfgang exchange a glance, then look at her. When Marie returned the attention, Hoshino abruptly looked away, while Wolfgang smirked. She ground her teeth at the look, and wondered what she was being left out of.
"We'll be deploying from Manufacturing Plant Alpha as soon as our liaison's mech arrives," Thomas was saying. "In the meantime, here's your assigned reading material."
He stepped forward, passing out data chips.
"That covers the topography and atmosphere of this hemisphere," he explained. "I expect you all to know this area like the backs of your hands before we move out. No one's tripping over tree roots on my watch."
"McLeod's already seen the aerial view," Carradine added. "I'll bet she's ready to get out there and take care of business." Marie managed to smile at the compliment, but she was also trying to keep her balance as she was suddenly lightheaded. Her heart was accelerating at the thought of being deployed against a mystery force that could strike from anywhere. She had to hope she was ready, because she got the feeling she wouldn't get many second chances. Thanks for listening. And if you've listened to the previous chapters, thanks for coming back. I hope you enjoyed this. BattleTech and MechWarrior are the property of Catalyst Game Labs. Before them was WizKids, and before them was FASA. There are also countless authors and artists who have contributed to this universe over the years. I encourage you to support the owners and any contributors in any way you can. Sound effects are sourced from freesound.org under the Creative Commons license. Rachel McLeod is a creation of James D. Long, who among other things wrote Main Event and DRT for the BattleTech universe. Go read his stuff. I want to shout out to Panzer Bunn, an artist I've been working with for an important piece for this story. He's going through some tough times and could use some support right now. Even if all you can do is send an encouraging comment his way, I'm sure it would be greatly appreciated. You can find him on Twitter at the handle @PanzerBunn, PanzerBunn. Subscribe for more, and if you think I earned it, leave a 5-star review. Thanks again.